You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. In this bonus series titled Whiskey and Wild Hares, Katie Willis shares the story about the Great Raccoon Wars of 2010. All right, let's get after it.
Oh my God, I love her. Okay, let's start over.
Okay.
Hi, good evening, Courtney Bastian. How are you?
Happy Groundhog Day.
Happy Groundhog Day. Happy Groundhog Day. Third installment of Wild Hare and Whiskey.
It is. It's the third one.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm looking forward. We've had some hard laughs. We've had some sadness. We've had some real good times, some bad times, and all in the between. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you got for us tonight.
I got my number one bird dog right here, getting a little face scratch. Do you find that wire hairs like you have to really start at the nose at least once a day and really, really, really get like a full face, a full snoodle scratch?
Yeah, they like that.
I find that all wire hairs need
but that. They also like it like right under the chin. Like if you can, you know, do the outward chin beard tickle, they really like that.
Ooh, you like that? You like that? Ooh, goo goo. Okay. So what you drinking tonight?
I have, so in my typical whiskey fashion, I have a fruity one. It you might not appreciate me for a long time with my choices, but I do like fruit and sweetness. So I have a local distillery, Lolo Creek, and it is their huckleberry flavored bourbon whiskey called Hucked. And okay. It's kind of cool. I don't know if you can see that in the back. There's some writing. Try to put the light on. See. Anyway,
yeah.
But it says pronoun Hucked. Noun. Bourbon whiskey flavored with a sweet yet tart purple Northwest indigenous berry called a huckleberry. Verb, tipsy. When you add the rare goodness of a huckleberry to incredibly smooth whiskey, chances are you'll get hucked.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. And in my typical manner, it is on ice. So
I like it. I like it.
What do you got?
You know what my dad would say about this is it wouldn't be right if we were all the same, which is true. Like, it's a good thing that you like fruity whiskeys on ice because somebody needs to, right? So I am sampling this bourbon. I don't know if you can see it because I'm outside.
Can.
And it's called Trails End. It's a 10-year bourbon. It's really interesting. This is the second bottle of this that I've had. And the first bottle you actually sampled when we met up for our little hunting trip.
Yes.
But I have taken on a couple other hunting trips and I've managed to get right through it, just right through it. So I had to get another one. And I definitely really, I'm really loving this whiskey. It is, it starts its life in Kentucky, which allows it to be a bourbon. And then after 8 years in Kentucky, it comes out to Oregon where it gets finished with some water off Mount Hood and put in some Oregon oak barrels. And I would definitely call it a rich whiskey. It's rich. It's got a lot of caramel and vanilla, and I'm really enjoying drinking it now because it's not as cold as it should be the beginning of February, but it's at least chilly out here. And this is a really rich whiskey that I think will be like too heavy in my mouth to drink in summertime when you want something that's lighter and a little bit crispier. So I'm very much enjoying this, this Trails End Special Reserve whiskey. It is 105 proof. So it'll get ya. Oh man, made in Hood River, product of Hood River Distillers.
Yeah,
River,
I was gonna say River, that's Hood River Oregon. Distillery.
Yeah, it's 105 is no joke.
And mine's 75. Yeah, to give you
it's a no joke. It's a no joke. It's
that's good. It's good. It was. I think I had like two glasses of that on ice.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. It was,
yeah,
it made me definitely make a face, but I did it. So now that hunting season's over, t- tell me what was your most memorable hunt of the season?
Well, that's definitely that trip to North Dakota and the rooster.
Yeah.
But that story we've definitely covered. But I would say outside of that, this last weekend was really great. The Muppets, I don't know if they knew it was the last weekend or whether it just all clicked for both of them. Like, it's kind of been one of those, like, they've been doing a little bit of this hopscotch where, like, one of them will have a really good weekend and the other one will be a piece of shit. I mean, not entirely, but, like, yeah, you know, one will bust birds or one will try to steal a point or, and I don't run them together a lot. I usually try to split them up just to not let them kind of feed off their own energy, but they do hunt really well together too. Like, they cover good ground. And so we hunted 3 days this weekend, for the final weekend of the season. And, I was so proud of them. Like, we did have one hooray gravy moment where Gravy, I'm not kidding you, supermanned into a covey of birds, like fully, like could not control his graviness. The first covey we saw all weekend. And he was like, his eyes rolled into the back of his head and he just couldn't help his gravy self. But after we got that out of the way, I mean, they just tightened right up. They were steady. They were holding coveys. They were backing each other, which was really amazing. Like, both Sky and Gravy, because the vegetation is a little sparse this year, they could really see each other. And both of them backed each other like 50 yards out. Like, I was nice. Shocked at how far away they were when they stopped and saw their litter mate and were like, oh, wait a minute. He's like doing something. Gravy has not been the better retriever. Sky's been the better retriever, and she's consistently marked birds really well all season and retrieved. She parades a little bit like the princess she is, but like she does a really good marked retrieve. And Gravy's often quit on birds, right? Like, you send him to go on a fetch and he kind of cruises about halfway to the bird and then he comes back and he hasn't really gotten it. And he had two retrieves this weekend where the first one was like probably a solid 300 or 400 feet down, like, right where we were up high, bird went up, bang, bird down. And I saw it drop into the sagebrush at the very bottom of this draw. And I was like, oh my God, I really don't know what happened. And both of the Muppets had taken off, right? Like, the birds flew, the Muppets had taken off, and it had one of those little rollers. So you couldn't kind of see a little bit for a period of time. And I was just about to start walking down to it. And all of a sudden I saw Gravy squirt out at the bottom of, you know, like back into view. And he was running straight at the chunk of sage where I marked the bird, and he grabbed it and he brought it all the way back. And I was like, this is why we pay you, right? Like, this is why we pay you to like bring me back this bird so I don't have to walk down there. And so I was super impressed with that. And then the last covey, the last bird of 2021-2022 season, I thought I missed. Like, covey got up, I shot, the bird was going straight and it took a hard banking left turn. And my partner had shot his bird and his dog was getting his bird. And Gravy just took off. And I was like, no bird, Gravy, no bird, you know, like, come on back. And he again, like, went out of sight and he comes back over the rim rock with a bird in his mouth. And when I looked at it, I had put a single pellet in like the back of the left side of it, the right side of its head. And I had broken its right wing. And so I must've just hit it. And that's why it banked and like peeled off. And I was like, holy cow, bud, I would have not even sent you on a retrieve because I didn't even know that I hit that bird. And so that'll be pretty memorable, that the last bird of 2022, Gravy had more confidence in me than I did.
That's awesome.
So
that's awesome.
It was pretty good.
And I mean, just the progress of both of those puppies through the season from start to finish was pretty remarkable, wasn't it?
Yeah, really. Yeah. So when we met up in late October, there was no backing and pointing was intermittent. And I will say that for a lot of reasons, chukar are a great bird, but I think one of the things that's really great about like chukars and huns, and I've heard this about sharp tails, I've never hunted sharp tails, is that they teach puppies manners because they just get up and get the hell out. And so I think it was just a lot of putting the puppies on a lot of those birds, you know, those covey birds, that just get up and get gone. That really teaches the, well, quail too. I mean, quail do it too. That just really teaches, you know, puppies manners and teaches them that they need to like stop, slow down, behave. And so, yeah, it was really great to go from, I mean, well, the last time we hunted together, Gravy didn't point anything. He must've run up like a dozen grouse. Like he wasn't stopping for anything. And then to get to the end of the season where not only is he pinning and pointing and holding lit coveys of chukar, which are wily as shit. I mean, those birds get hunted a lot.
And from a distance.
And then, and from a distance. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, so to go from the last weekend of October, Gravy not pointing anything, to the last weekend of January and Gravy is pointing everything. And Sky's been really consistent the whole year. She's definitely had some days where she was better or worse, but she's definitely, she's just a lot more of a thinking dog. And so, you know, so she's just kind of like, I think she put it together a little bit earlier than Gravy did. But even her, like she had some days where she wasn't very good and I got frustrated with her and where she was busting birds. But yeah, just to watch him really come through and to back from those distances and to handle those late season birds. I mean, it's an awesome final note for the season. It's super sad. It's super sad because they're done hunting and they just showed up their best selves. But you know, now it just gives us something to really fuel our training for next season and really be ready to get out there and just slay, you know, September to January, as opposed to November to January. So
it'll be fun. Yeah. You have a lot of plans for the summer too, with working on them and doing a couple more advanced skill stuff. So
yeah, definitely.
It'll be fun to see the development. Yeah. And actually see what their bird manners are. I'm really curious, since these last couple of months, it's just been 100% wild birds, to get them back on planted birds and to see what their bird manners might be. And if that makes a difference.
Yeah. So. Yeah, for certain. It'll be really interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm planning on doing the NAVDA. We'll see how they do. They're pretty young still, but like definitely aiming towards a NAVDA utility in August. And then also the Versatile Hunting Dog Federation AHEA advanced hunting evaluation. And kind of see, again, I mean, I don't want to pressure them. And if they start sort of, you know, like you don't want to pressure a young dog too much. It needs to stay fun and it needs to stay engaging. And so as long as they stay engaged and they're having a good time, those are the goals that we set for ourselves. But if they, you know, if they need a break over the summer, then we won't, you know, we won't necessarily, I'm not like, if I don't do those tests, I'm not going to be heartbroken. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do, you know, as far as like taking training pressure now that they know, was that we're here for.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what your wild hair story is tonight.
I think it's time to talk about the Great Raccoon Wars of 2010.
Let's do that.
I feel like as I was thinking about this story and how this quintessential Katie and Bird Dog adventure story is definitely not for the faint of heart. It's a bit of a rough story. And so there's kind of two things that I think I need to say out in front. First off, I was born a fighter. I'll always fight. I try really hard not to fight, but it's been a learned process to not be a fighter. I am a fighter. And I didn't fight with anybody more than my sisters, except for people who fought with my sisters. And so there's definitely that guardian at the gate mentality for me, where fiercely loyal and protective. And it's just not a good idea to mess with things that I care about. And so as I think about this story and the person that I was when this happened, I think anybody who doesn't know me should know that's just what you get is this, you know, the guardian at the gate, a fighter, sort of person. The other part of the story that I don't wear pajamas. And so this is a primarily nocturnal story. And so
our second out of third stories where you're not wearing clothes. So we'll just leave that right there. There's a theme.
So you just have to know that when there's a nocturnal component of this story, that if I tell you I put something on, that is what I have on. Okay. So, it's 2010. Bird Dog is, I think he might be a year or two old, pretty young. And we're in college. I'm working on my undergrad. And I was trying really hard to be a responsible member of the world, but also really didn't have any money. And so I had this really great little rental house in downtown Bend that was a tiny house on a big yard. And it had it came with the giant gardens and big yard. And so I put in this massive vegetable garden and I built a chicken coop and I had 6 chickens and this massive vegetable garden. And I hunted in the fall and like was lucky enough to get a deer. And so that's what we kept in the freezer. And that was primarily what I was consuming. And it was part of a goal. Bird Dog is being really insistent right now. We're telling your story. And that was primarily the goal. Like I didn't want to be buying processed foods. I didn't want to be supporting industrial agriculture. I really wanted to be, I actually set a goal at one point in time to eat within 50 miles of my house. And with the exception of like some olive oil and things like that, I really was able to do that. And primarily because of this garden and primarily because of the chickens. The chickens were my main protein source. I ate a lot of eggs. And so I had 6 chickens. I had a pair of golden lace Wyandottes named Judy and Betty. And Betty was a bitch. I had a Plymouth Barred Rock named Hazel, who wasn't super friendly either. And then I had 3 of those Americanas. Yeah. And they were super, super friendly and gorgeous. So I had Josephine, Pilar, and Carmen were my Americanas. And Pilar was amazing because she was the best bug control. Like I had a bunch of corn and with corn, you get earwigs and that queen would just find earwig nests in the ground and just destroy them and eat all the earwigs. And then Josephine was definitely my favorite chicken. She was like a chocolate body. She had this golden head and she looked like a hawk. And they would run around the yard with me while I was gardening. And then in the evening when I was having like my little gin and tonic, Josephine would hop up on my shoulder and preen and like hang out with me. And it's weird. It's fucking weird. But anyhow, these are my chickens. So
Bird Dog left those alone.
Well, they were not, it was like when they were loose in the yard, the Bird Dog was, we had like a pasture system for rotating the livestock. Okay. So he wasn't cohabitating with the chickens. And I will say one time, Betty, that tried to make a run for it out of the coop one day and he was right behind me and it was in the middle of force fetching and she flew right into his open mouth and when he was like and he was like, I got it, and she was like, oh god, it's like, oh my god. I was like, that's what you get, Betty, you bitch. And so Betty was super mean to all of the chickens, except for Judy, who was like her sister, whatever, sister friend, until I got my first pet pigeon. And so I got this pet pigeon and his name was Fat Bob. And he was a homing pigeon and he was a cock. And what's really interesting is as soon as I introduced him to the coop, he roostered up and he would like if Betty was trying to pull out like Pilar's feathers, he would like flap down and be like, knock it off. And he's so fat, right? Like I had the little S&M harness for him, you know, to put a pigeon on a string for like, cause I had him for steadiness, you know, a little leather S&M harness. And it got small. Like it got like, you'd put it on him and he'd be like, and he'd be like so fat. He was so Fat Bob. because all he did was like live with the chickens and eat chicken grain. And like, I would fly him out of the coop and he would just fly over onto the neighbor's house and he would sit up on the neighbor's roof and like watch the chickens walk around. And then as soon as I was like, chooky, 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 put the grain back in the chicken coop, Bob would fly down. And he actually got a point in time where I could put a grain in my hand and be like, Bob, 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 Fat Bob. And Fat Bob would come down and like, murr, murr, which was great because then I could use him again the same day for training. Like pop, you know, like let him go. Hey, steadiness training. Okay, you hold still. I'm going to go get Bob again. Hold on, bird dog. Yeah, I'm going to go get Bob and get Bob. Come back and do some more work with Bob. So that was my coop.
So this is great though. I just need to intercept for a second because there's a lot of people that live in town and have bird dogs and they want to train. And so this is great advice right here. Listen to this. All you need is one pigeon and do that thing of calling them. How do you calm down, Katie? How do you say that? How do you call the pigeon down?
Fat Bob, Fat Bob. And then he would just come down because that's what I fed the chickens with. You did that on purpose. You didn't actually need me to do that again.
Perfect.
But I think that's the thing is like, if you're only like, if you live in town, when, you know, and you're working in your backyard, a lot of what you're doing is steadiness. And all you need is a pigeon, an S&M harness, a string, and like a stick, and your woe board. And you can do a lot with that. Like, I think Bird Dog has a lot of natural steadiness in him, but he's still steady to wing shot and fall. And I think a lot of that is because the only game that I could play was like S&M harness Bob. And so, like, you know, I used to Bob all up and down, right? Like boop-a-doo-doo-doo, up and down and in between bird dog feet. And then, you know, like burr, burr, all over the place. And he would just sit there and like quiver and be crazy about it because he wanted to chomp Bob bad. But then also I used Bob during force fetching and I would put him in a little Velcro harness. I will put Bob right in bird dog's mouth. And then I would give him extra grain because that is a super f***ed up thing to do to a
So how did Bob eventually meet his demise? I'm curious.
So here's where we go. So this is my setup, right? I live in this little house. My landlords live right next door. And they had already had a 11 o'clock at night skunk shaking on their patio that woke them up vomiting where Bird Dog had, I let him out for his last pee and he jumped over the literal, not kidding, white picket fence and murdered a skunk on their back porch. And like,
your neighbor was your landlord?
My neighbor was my landlord. So I had, and so I lived in this little house. They turned the water off. They turned the water off in the winter. So not only did I have to go over there and collect my bird dog and the bits of skunk that were left behind from the absolute shake to pieces, I thought Bird Dog lost his eye because his eye swelled up so big. He had like the skunk goose like down his face. But they had turned off my water like the week before. So I had to be like, hi, the dog killed a skunk. Can I borrow your hose? And like use their hose and spigot to like wash the dog off in the street. I was like, hi, just me, the tenant, living next door. So anyhow, so I live next door to my landlords.
Terrible.
I live next door to my landlords. Terrible, terrible. And it's a nice place and I'm having a nice time. And, the start of the raccoon wars, Bird Dog wakes me up at about 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And he is like 2 at this point in time. So he sleeps through the night. The only reason he's ever woken me up in the middle of the night is because he ate fetid carcass of roadkill and he has to go like explode himself in the backyard. And so I'm like, okay, cool, right? So I get up out of my bed and I go to my back door and I let Bird Dog out into the backyard. And so the back door is kind of a stoop. And then there's probably 6 to 10 feet from there to the chicken coop. And so you know how like you're in the morning and you're like, oh God, what's going on? And first off, Bird Dog does not run to the back fence where he normally explodes himself. He runs around behind the chicken coop. So it's a chicken coop building that I built and this big enclosed run. And I know that there are all sorts of like skunks, raccoons that live in town. And so I had built what I thought was this perfectly safe chicken coop where the chicken coop house was attached to the run by this chunk of wire and everything was stapled and there was no egress from the top. I had dug down below. I had buried wire. I had 2x6s around the perimeter.
Yeah, you did it right.
I felt like I did it right.
Research. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm standing there and I'm like, oh God, what is going on? And it's like, you know how things appear slowly? Like the first thing I noticed is I was like, why is Pilar out of the coop? And I saw her like on the ground. And then I saw like Josephine run by. And I was like, why are the chickens out of the coop? It's dark. I don't know. If you don't know anything about chickens, but they go to roost. As soon as it's dark, chickens go to bed. That's it. Like chickens go to bed and they don't wake up. And so right. I like walk over to the coop and I'm like looking in it because I'm like, the f***? And Bird Dog is on the other side of the coop. There's a lilac bush inside the coop and he's like trying to get the lilac bush. And all of a sudden it's like, ah! There is a f***ing raccoon on the inside of the coop and it's like jumped up on the wire in my face. And I'm like, right, screaming. And that's when I realized that the reason that the chickens are out is because there's a raccoon in the hen house. That's when I realized that Pilar is dead.
Oh,
that's why she's on the ground. Uh-huh. Pilar is dead.
Oh, that bastard.
And so I'm like, fuck you, and I hit the raccoon on the wire and it goes back in. And I open the coop, the outdoor run, and I scoop Josephine up and I shut the door and I go back in the house. And I'm like, and I look Josephine over and she's got, I can see there's a little blood on the back of her neck, but I'm like, okay, this is okay. So I put her in the bathtub. I'm like, that's okay. I'm like, I can throw a stitch. I can fix you, Josephine. You're going to be fine. I'm like, I'm going to kill this fucking raccoon. Like, yeah. I'm going to kill it.
Yeah.
And so I get the pistol
yeah.
and I get the pillow off the couch. And I'm like, okay, I'll put the pistol in the pillow.
I've seen that in movies.
I'm going to shoot this.
Because that's like a silencer, right? Like that's a silencer.
Right, right.
Because you're in town.
But then it actually occurs to me that there's a projectile involved and I would be shooting into my neighbor's mother-in-law, which is literally where her mother lives. And I'm like, okay, that's not it. And so I'm like, oh my God, I got to kill this thing. And, I get out my big hunting knife and I'm like, I'm going to stab this raccoon with this hunting knife. And I'm walking out the back door and I see one of my ski poles and I'm like, aha, yes. So I kick the basket off my ski pole and I duct tape the hunting knife to the end of the ski pole. And I'm like, I'm going to stab this thing in the fucking liver and I'm going to bleed out and die. And then I'm like, ah, safety. So I now get dressed and I put on all of my Carhartt uniform, my giant ski gloves with the gauntlets, my ski goggles, ski mask, everything on, rubber boots. And I grab the lid of the chicken food container to go in there with my makeshift spear and stab this raccoon. And I get in there and it's gotten out. It's not in there anymore.
Oh, no.
It's not in there anymore. It got out. And I was like, you know, damn. Like I was so ready to kill that raccoon. And I was like, damn it. I was like, I'm like, it's okay. It's okay. I got to take care of Josephine. And I go and I get my chicken out of the bathtub and I start looking at her and he has torn open her spinal cord. Like I can see her spinal cord.
Ugh.
And now it's 4 o'clock in the morning and I am choking my favorite chicken to death in the fucking bathroom.
Oh, gotcha.
And I am so upset. I am like on the couch sobbing from the adrenaline high, the low. And like we had done battle with raccoons before. Like there was a raccoon that was messing with our cat and Bird Dog had gotten into it with a raccoon on the porch and he'd got his face cut and his whole head swelled up like orangutan because they're dirty. But mm-hmm. between those two things, like there is this simmering, festering hatred for this raccoon. And so I'm sitting on the couch already waiting for daybreak to see what the rest of the damage is. And basically like sitting there with Bird Dog and I'm like, we're going to kill these raccoons. Like, we are going to kill these raccoons. And daybreak comes and I go out to the chicken coop and Carmen is also dead. So my three favorite chickens are dead. And he's broken both of Bob's legs.
No way.
He broke both of Bob's legs. So little pigeon legs just snapped in half. And so I had to kill Bob.
Oh,
I had to kill my pet pigeon. That, yeah. And of course he left Betty. I was like,
he did.
I was like, if you're going to kill anything in that coop, like, why did you kill my best beloved? Like, I was
all of the best beloveds,
all of the best beloveds.
Terrible.
Yeah. It's super, super upsetting. And I was like, that's it. We're going to war. Like, we're going to war.
Yeah.
So we got a live trap. And the first thing we trapped, like, four nights in a row was our cat, Raul Sanchez Duarte Ramirez, Pedro Pesco Salido, our cat. And then he got...
Why does he have 75 names?
Because I was 19 and I drank a lot of Bartles and James back then. I was blonde. I don't know, dude. I, like, decided that he was a Latino cat. And so I named him Raul Sanchez Duarte Ramirez, Pedro Pesco Salido. We called him Pedro for short. And so mostly we caught Pedro. And then we, you know, like, I shored everything up. And then we had a period of time, like probably 4 or 5 days, where we didn't catch anything. And I was like, well, maybe this was just like a one-shot deal. Then Bird Dog woke me up in the middle of the night. And we go out there. And there is, I kid you not, a 50-pound raccoon in the trap. It's massive. I didn't know it was a trophy raccoon. It was easily 3 times bigger than any other raccoon that I ever caught or have ever seen. And so then I took that out into the woods. Bird Dog really wanted to get it. And I was like, should I just let it go and, like, let Bird Dog tear into this raccoon? And then I remembered, like, how infected his face got. And I was like, no. And so I shot that raccoon. And over the course of, like, the next 3 months, we trapped and killed, I think, 6 raccoons.
Holy cow. In your fenced in backyard.
In my fenced in backyard. And it culminated the final night of the raccoon wars. And this is where I think that raccoons may actually have a level of intelligence, because this thing happened and we never had a raccoon in the backyard again for the rest of the 3 years that I lived there. And so Bird Dog wakes me up in the middle of the night. By this point in time, a friend of mine has given me a recurve bow so that I can silently dispatch raccoons in the middle of the night.
Instead of using a pillow for your
pistol. Of using a pillow and a 22. Yeah. So.
Very nice friend.
Bird Dog wakes me up. I open the back door. I see that there's a raccoon in the trap, but Bird Dog is not going for the trap. Usually when there's one in the trap, he's like on the trap. He's like biting the trap. He's like, rah, you're a bad guy. He's not. He's underneath the coop. And so I grab my trusty red and black checked hunting jacket and I put that on and I have my little headlamp and I go out there and there is a raccoon in the trap and there is one underneath the coop that Bird Dog is now fighting, right? That now it's like World War III under the coop. And I look up to look around for, like, figure out what I'm going to do. And there's 2 more raccoons in the freaking tree over the fence.
No way.
And I'm oh my God.
One told their friends.
Yeah. Like, come on. Well, and they never got my chickens again. Like, I redid my chicken coop and they never actually got in again, but they were always trying. And so I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do? Right. Like, I got to do something. I got to help Bird Dog out. And I look and I kind of like, I'm looking around and BD starts backing it up out of underneath the chicken coop. And I look underneath it and he has the raccoon by the tail and he is dragging this raccoon by the tail out from underneath the chicken coop. And I'm like, oh shit, dude. As soon as that raccoon, cause the chicken coop's like, you know, about 6 inches off the ground. As soon as he pulls that raccoon clear, it is going to turn around and I'm going to end up with a one-eyed Bird Dog.
Yeah.
And I look around and there's a, there's a chunk of 2x4 right next to my foot, and I grab it with my hand. And as soon as Bird Dog's head is clear of the coop, I just start swinging. And mm-hmm. I bludgeon that raccoon to death as it gets pulled out from underneath the chicken coop. And the two in the trees obviously kept note because we never saw them again. We never had another single after I finally, because all of the raccoons I trapped, I took into the woods and shot, right? So none of their friends knew what the hell happened. Like, they're like, what happened to Larry? Anybody know? Nobody's seen Larry around the garbage can for a while. But that last one, like, there were two raccoons watching this situation of the Bird Dog, wham, wham, this naked lady swing at this damn raccoon. And
they went back and told their friends.
And they were like, because I kept the trap open and baited for the next 3 years, and I never had another raccoon. I caught a few more neighborhood cats, but I never had another raccoon mess with my chickens or bother my chicken coop. And I think it's because word got out. They were like, hey guys, we figured out what's been happening to people. They haven't been abducted by aliens. They've been trapped and likely killed. We just saw Ralph get bludgeoned with a 2x4. Like, that is the end of it. And that was good. And I was like, oh, sweet. We're done with raccoons.
Right.
Until about 4 years ago. And this, I think, is the best raccoon war story. And I heard it secondhand. I had a roommate named August who was trying to impress a girl. And she had a dog, and we live by this river trail. And so he was like, hey, why don't we go walk dogs together? And she agreed to an evening, like a 11:30 at night, moonlit river trail walk. And August lets Bird Dog off the leash. And and BD takes off and is running around. And this is what August told me. He said, I was walking along talking to, Aaron, and we were having a nice time. And then I heard Bird Dog barking like crazy. And he was down by the river, and there's a bunch of like willow and then cattails and everything like that, this marsh. And he said he had to wade out through all this stuff to get to where Bird Dog was barking. And when he got out there, there is a raccoon on its hind legs, waist deep in water, and Bird Dog is barking and running around and trying to take shots at it. Oh my and gosh. He's like yelling, and he's like, just as I was just about there and could almost grab Bird Dog, BD lunges at the raccoon, who has been kind of like slowly backing up into the water. The raccoon is like backing up into the water.
Yeah. They drown dogs, right? Don't raccoons drown dogs in water? Yeah. Like, they're known for that. Okay. Yeah.
They're known for that.
He's like waiting for it.
He's like backing it up. And August lunges for the dog, and the dog lunges for the raccoon, and they go at it in the river. There's a pretty steep drop off right there. And August describes it as World War III underwater. It's just like, and like, there's just these bodies, right? And they're out in the current. And I swim there in the summer, and I know the spot. And it basically goes from like this deep to like 12 feet deep. And so maybe not 12 feet, maybe like 10, but anyhow, deeper than a man can stand. And so August is now, it's like 10 o'clock at night. It was in the fall. It's not warm. He's on a date. And Bird Dog is in a fight to the death with a raccoon underwater. And like, what do you grab? Like, what do you grab? Like, you're just as likely to grab a Bird Dog as you are to grab a raccoon that is going to bite you and give you rabies forever.
Right.
And so he's like trying to yell or do whatever. And all of a sudden it gets quiet. Like, it gets quiet and nothing's happening. And then Bird Dog pops up and is like, like coughing and shaking his head with a limp raccoon in his mouth. And August grabs the dog, who drops the raccoon, and wrestles him back to the shore, cold and wet and half drowned, and proceeds to watch the body of the raccoon float lifelessly down the river. Right. And then try to scramble back, gets himself all cut to hell, back up to where Erin and her well-behaved chocolate Labrador, who is on a leash, are sitting there waiting for them to come back.
How long had August lived with you? And did you not share the memo, don't let Bird Dog off a leash?
I had known August for like 4 or 5 years. Like, he was a friend of mine. And
so he knew very well what Bird Dog was capable of.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the thing about it is that there are Bird Dog people and there are not Bird Dog people. And people who don't Bird Dog they think I'm making this shit up. Right. They think I'm making this shit up.
Yeah.
And they think I'm full of fibs. Right.
Yeah.
Like there's no way, right? Like there's no way that you and your dog were out trying to stab a raccoon in the liver in the middle of the night. Like, who does that? Like, Bird Dog people do that, you know? Like,
yes.
And they have this incredible drive, right? And so he came back and he was like, because I was at home and I'm like, how did it go? And he's like, I let Bird Dog off the leash. And I was like, what happened? Like, what happened? And he told me the whole story. And I was like, oh, shit. And like, he had a couple scratches on his face, but none the worse for wear. And and I was just like, you cannot turn your back on that dog. And you can't take him off a leash if you don't have the cell phone electric collar on. Because he's just going to go murder things. But he still, I mean, like, we both still, it's hard. Like, people put up those cute Instagram videos of, like, the raccoons, like, washing the food or doing whatever. And all that I see is something that needs to die. I will never forgive the entire species of raccoons for having to have me kill my chicken and murder my fucking pigeon. Like, I will never forgive that. Oh my God, Bob.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And like Bird Dog still hates raccoons. And in fact, last year, when he was not doing so good, I took him for a walk without the Muppets, just to see if I, you know, could get him moving. And we were down by the river trail in sort of the same area, and a raccoon ran across the trail and I almost let him go. I was almost let him go because you know what?
One less
That'll
raccoon
be your
would
last
make
stand. Like, you're not going to survive. You're not going to survive. You know, like, his sister actually died. Her last day on Earth, she killed two raccoons, and then they found her having killed two raccoons. She killed a raccoon. They found her. They brought her back. She escaped the yard, went back down into the slough, killed another raccoon. They brought her back. She looked fine. Everything was great. They put her in her kennel. She curled up, and next time they went out there, she was dead. And that was like her last act, was to murder raccoons. And I knew that story. And so there was part of me that was like, I don't know if you're going to make it another week. And we're going to go to the vet, and the vet's probably going to tell me that I got to put you down. And shouldn't I just unclick this leash and like let you, because he saw it, right? Like, he saw it, he smelled it. And he wanted to go murder that raccoon. And I was like, you could just go out like your sister did, like a warrior. Mm-hmm. And then I just couldn't do it because it turns out I'm not that much of a warrior. But yeah, like, we don't like raccoons around here.
Yeah.
We just don't. Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
So I'm also curious, though, did August ever get a second date with Erin?
He did. They actually dated for like 5 years.
It's great.
Yeah. It worked out. Great. Yeah, he pleaded innocent. But what's really funny is that Bird Dog never liked her chocolate lab. He didn't like her chocolate lab. And so I could always tell when she was over because he had all of his stuffed toys. And he would be on his dog bed, which is a circle, with all of his toys underneath him, like an old broody hen. And I'd be like, oh, the chocolate lab was over today while I was at work. And he'd be like, don't want him to get my toys. And I was like, you are a weird old dog. You're a weird dog, but it's cool, man. They're your toys. Like,
if well, you the
wanna,
chocolate lab didn't
if
help
you want to protect him. Yeah. Yeah. If you're not man enough to come down here and help me murder this raccoon in the river, you don't get to have my toys.
Exactly. I agree with Bird Dog 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
So that is the Great Raccoon Wars of 2010.
Very, very good. What a bastard raccoon. I feel like all of us with wire hairs are going to just kind of help that raccoon population have just one less more, maybe on the next opportunity. Yeah.
I mean, the bummer of it is, you know, like, I was so broke back then, I had no idea that I had a trophy raccoon on my hands. So at that point in time, Bird Dog was a young man. He weighed about 48-50 pounds. That raccoon was bigger than my dog. That first raccoon was bigger than my dog. And I didn't have that much experience with raccoons. I've since shared that with raccoon hunters, and they're like, wow, that is like, I don't think I've ever seen a raccoon that big. And then I went into my first Cabela's a few years after that. And they have like that big diorama, you know, and they have all of the taxidermy. And they had like this family of raccoons down by the fake water. And they were like this big. Like, they were maybe 15 or 20 pound raccoon. And I was, they probably would have given me like $250 to put in their diorama as a trophy raccoon. I mean, that raccoon, I am not kidding, was as big as my torso. It was huge. It weighed like 50 pounds. I had to have two hands to pick it up. It was a massive raccoon. And I could have used that money from Cabela's. Yeah. I could have used it. That I didn't know. Good. It was like people who talk about throwing away the lottery ticket. I threw away a trophy raccoon.
Oh my gosh. I had a 45 pound raccoon. So not nearly the size of yours.
That's still a really big raccoon.
Yeah.
That's still a really big raccoon.
They're pretty hardcore, but that was one of my very first, real wild hair experiences. We had brought a dog over here from England, and his second day in our house, I went outside to let him in, and we had a fenced in backyard, and he was gone. And I called him, and he came down the middle of our dead end street with a possum in his mouth. Like a week later, I took him for a hike off leash with the e-collar, and there was no GPS. He went missing. And I called my husband frantically. I lost this dog. I lost this dog. We don't own this dog. He's like a $20,000 dog. He's here from England. What do we do? He's gone. I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do. And all of a sudden, like, I walk a mile and I hear a bunch of snarling, and he's fighting with this raccoon. And, you know, what do you do? Like, you have to just stand there and watch it. Like, I'm screaming, calling his name. I was nicking him on the collar when I thought he was lost, thinking I'd come back. Yeah. So then I feel really bad. Like, I'm nailing him with the collar, and that's probably just pissing him off more.
He can't feel that. When you're fighting a raccoon, you could hook up jumper cables to a wire hair and they wouldn't notice.
Yeah. So eventually he just pulled the dick right out of the raccoon and killed it that way.
What?
Yes. It was a 30-minute fight I was watching. Because I couldn't do anything about it. And he literally pulled the dick off of the raccoon and killed, and then it died. Internal. There. Grab out.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Well, you know, I feel like that was a smart move. Yeah, I'll keep that in mind the next time I tangle with raccoons. That instead of trying to stab them in the liver, I should just try to cut off their dick.
Yeah, and it goes quick. Or at that point. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
You would never do that, would you, Nora? You would never do that. You're such a good girl.
I know. What's funny is I don't think, like, Gravy, like, he really likes the cat and the cat's his friend, and he hasn't shown a lot of fur drive. Sky's going to kill a cat, and she would kill a raccoon, and she has been trying really hard to kill a rabbit. Like, her fur drive is, she is a savage. She is a straight up savage. Like, I was thinking about,
she lives with a cat,
you know, like, she lives with a cat. She lives with two cats.
She lives with Fat Cat.
She lives with Fat Cat, and she lives with Nina. And she really wants to kill Nina. Like, she really, when the way she looks at Nina, man.
What's Nina's full name, though? Let's be real. What's Nina's full name?
Nina's full name is Nina Kattenberg. She's named after an NPR correspondent that covers the Supreme Court. So her name's Nina Totenberg. I named her Nina Kattenberg, and she covers the Supreme Couch. You can find her on Napping Purring Radio, which goes along with Fat Cat's name is not really Fat Cat. It's Scratch Simon. And so Scott Simon is the host of Saturday Morning Edition on NPR. And so Fat Cat is actually Scratch Simon, who is the host of Catterday Meowing Edition. It just is this longstanding dream of mine that to have cats named after famous people. It started with Raul Sanchez Duarte Ramirez. Pedro Pascal Salido was a dictator. He was an absolute despot. He was miserable to live with. He sent the UPS driver to the emergency department one time. I told that guy not to touch the cats. So I was like, oh, the next cat will be Fidel Castro. it was when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was in charge of Iran. And so I was like, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was the next cat that I was going to get. So that kind of, and then I was like, you know, the thing about life is that the energy you put out into it is the energy you get back. And so if you get another cat and you name it after despots, you're going to end up with another dictator of a cat who sends people to the, I mean, Pedro beat up a pit bull. Like, wow. The neighbor had a pit bull.
Holy cow.
The neighbor had a pit bull. And Pedro saw the pit bull, teased the pit bull, let the pit bull chase him underneath my Subaru until it got wedged, and then ran around the tire and jumped on the ass end of the pit bull and started tearing its skin open. To which the pit bull then backed out from underneath the Subaru and took off running down the street with a cat like a tiger on the back of a wildebeest. Ha! So he was terrible. And so I was like, wow. You know what? You cannot get a cat and name it after a dictator unless you want another cat that behaves this way. And so...
It's kind of impressive, yeah. Though.
It's super impressive. I mean, he was a remarkable cat. Like, he had a chair he sat in, and if people put their jacket on that chair, I would know, because it was like living room was separate from the kitchen and the dining room, and we have these dinner parties, and I would be like cooking, and I would turn around, and Pedro would be like staring at somebody with like vengeful intent. And I would look at that person and I would say, hey, where did you put your jacket? And they'd be like, oh, I hung it on that chair in the living room. I'm like, you kind of need to move your jacket. You can't put anything on that chair. That's Pedro's chair. And he is going to cut your eyes out. Like, that's just it. Like, he's going to cut your eyes out. yeah. And so, he was beautiful, but terrible. And so I was like, well, yeah, you got to be careful what you ask for in the world. And if you ask the, if you say the name out loud, you will get what you want, what you ask for. And so I was like, what's nicer? What's the nicest thing in the world? And it's hosts on NPR. Hosts on NPR are so nice. The only thing nicer than them is Canadians. And I couldn't come up with, you know, like clever names of cats named after, you know, Canadians. But yes, that's the only nicer thing in the world than NPR hosts is Canadians. And so I named my cats after NPR hosts so that they would be nice. And they are. They are nice cats. And Gravy loves them. And he doesn't ever look at them like he wants to murder them. But Sky watches them every day and thinks about how nice it would be to turn them into a fur cover bag of Jell-O and wear them as a hat.
She's pretty intense.
Yeah, she's like a fire at the circus.
All right. Well, let's close out this session of Whiskey and Wild Hairs. Yeah. With Raccoon Wars. Cheers, Katie.
Cheers, Courtney, to your good health.
And yours, and to Bird Dog, and the fact that he makes some phenomenal stories and memories for you to tell, because they're pretty great. Thanks, buddy. I got some salmon skins where that came from.
Oh, man. You can't go wrong with some salmon skins.
All right. We'll talk again next month, and hopefully we can do some live Whiskey and Wild Hair recordings at Pheasant Fest.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I'm booked. I'm waiting to hear if Katie can get booked. So we got to work out some scheduling.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of scheduling left to do, but I am pretty much 98.8% just going to do it. I'm just going to do it.
98.8.9.
carry the one, move the decimal over 5, raise to the power of 4.
Great.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be really good. Okay. Good night, all.
You have a good night.